This morning, it was Ken Lay's turn to do the walk, the perp walk, that is, into Houston's federal courthouse. The former CEO of the infamous energy company Enron stood in front of a packed courtroom to plead not guilty to the 11 charges on which he is indicted. Lay is currently free on a $500,000 bond, but if convicted on all counts, he could face millions in fines and up to 175 years in jail. After Lay appeared in court, one of the prosecutors, Andrew Weissman, spoke with reporters. He said that the issue in this case is whether Ken Lay told the truth about Enron's true financial state of affairs, but there is more at stake.
Criminal cases in America are not brought solely to send messages. They are brought to bring individuals to account for their criminal acts. There are, however, two undeniable messages from today's charges. First, to corporate America, your constituents are owed your complete candor, the unvarnished truth. Second, if you violate that trust, you will be called to account no matter how powerful, no matter how wealthy. No one is above the law.
A few minutes ago, Ken Lay held his own news conference where he said he's looking forward to demonstrating his innocence.
The Enron collapse was an enormous tragedy. I continue to grieve, as does my family, over the loss of the company, my failure to be able to save it, and the tremendous hardship it caused so many employees, retirees, and others. But failure does not equate to a crime.
If you have any questions about the legal side of the case against the former Enron founder, give us a call, 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. With us now to talk about what's in the indictment is James Cox, a law professor with Duke University. He joins us from his office in Durham, North Carolina. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
So in brief, what are the charges against Lay?
Well, there are multiple charges. The ones that are most likely to get the press coverage are the ones alleging false statements that Lay made. Lay made them to various audiences, from his own workforce to analysts, even to the outside auditor, Arthur Anderson, and to investors in the company's stock. So that's the bulk of the charges against Ken Lay in the area where I think the indictment has the greatest specificity. There are some more technical charges with respect to his ability to obtain loans from banks by representations that were false as to what he would be doing with the proceeds of the loans. Those are the bank fraud counts that are against Lay himself.
Now, these charges come after 2.5 years of investigation. How specific does the indictment get?
I find, as I was reading the indictment today, I was very curious about how specific it was going to be, and I found in several areas a great deal of specificity, which means the following, I believe, that there's a great deal of cooperation occurring on the part of, as we know, there's been scores of individuals indicted. Many of them are cooperating with the government at this point. So I think that these cooperating defendants have placed Ken Lay in the room, been able to identify what was said there, what his reactions were, so I think it's helping the government's case. I also think that given the complexity of these transactions, there's a lot of documentation that was being placed in front of Ken Lay, and that also shows what his knowledge was, and then we're able to show that he did about 180-degree different take when he made public statements about Enron's position.
Now, he's been indicted along with two other former Enron executives. How
yes,
are these
exactly.
cases, how are they all related?
We're all familiar with Jeffrey Skilling. Skilling was the CEO of Enron. He had actually been employed at Enron for a number of years, but was CEO for really for less than a year and would quit abruptly in August of 2001, in which point Ken Lay came back from being just chairman of the board and came back to being CEO. The other person that was indicted was Mr. Causey. Mr. Causey is the chief accounting officer of the firm and was at the literal vortex of all the accounting chicanery that occurred at Enron.
We are talking about the indictment of Enron executive Ken Lay. If you'd like to give us a call, if you have any questions, 1-800-989-8255. We're going to take a call from Joel in California. Hi, Joel.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
I've been wondering for a long time why it took so long to indict the head of the company when it was so obvious that he was one of the largest contributors to the Bush campaign in 2000. And also, it seems to me a little strange and more than a little coincidental that now that the suit against the Vice President, Dick Cheney, is going to be delayed until after the election, trying to get him to reveal who he met with when he formulated his energy policy. It seems that now that that's going to be delayed, it seems like it's okay to go after Tim Lay, and I just wanted to get your guests' response to that.
All right, thanks for your call, James. And before you respond, Mr. Cox, I just want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Go ahead.
Okay, Joe. Well, I think what it does is that the government's been very cautious in this case, not because of any political influence. My sense is that once Enron collapsed and there was just a revulsion about what happened there, that no self-respecting politician would want to have anything to do with even a hint of interfering. So I don't think there was any interference here. It's a complicated case, and the government has limited resources to pursue. There were questions about how many of those resources put into the energy crisis that Enron apparently created and in California, where you live, questions about cooking the books, which transactions go. There's so many that the government really had to sit down and figure out where the strongest case was, given the limited resources it had. And then it was very systematic, starting to lower levels of employees and working their way up to try and negotiate with them to be able to put the finger on the people above. I thought it was very significant a few months ago when we filed the indictment initially of Jeffrey Skilling, and now it's even more significant that we're going after the chairman. Now, the difficulty with proceeding after Ken Lay was that for many years when at Enron, he was something of a drive-by chairman of the board. That is, he was out cutting ribbons, giving away money, schmoozing with politicians, being a rainmaker, but not really deeply involved with what was occurring at the firm. And so it was entirely possible that, in the government's eyes, that he really didn't have the detailed knowledge of the level of and specificity of frauds that were engaged in by Enron.
And isn't that going to be pretty much his defense?
That's going to be his defense, but what's so interesting about this indictment is the indictment really focuses upon facts and behavior by Ken Lay post-Skilling. Otherwise, Skilling resigned as CEO in August of 2001. Lay walks in and immediately starts finding out, according to all the complaint, all the facts in this indictment, the true financial position of Enron, and then they're able to say that he goes right outside in the hallway, he meets the press, he meets with workers, he meets the outside accountants, and tells an entirely different story than the one he was told in private from his own help and employees.
Yeah. There's a kind of a sense of willing ignorance in Ken Lay's behavior.
I think there really was up until about August 2001, and I think that's why Skilling left abruptly. Skilling realized that he feels that he's covered his trails fairly well, but if he stayed around much longer, he was going to get dirty. Well, it turns out the guy who really got dirty was the cheerleader, Ken Lay himself, which is what Ken Lay became in late September and throughout October. He's telling employees the company's in great financial position. We have assets of $6.5 billion, making all kinds of false statements to everybody who would listen to him. And the statements were entirely false, as I said.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Mr. Cox.
My pleasure.
James Cox is a law professor with Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. He joined us this afternoon from his office on campus. Talk of the Nation is produced by Justine Kennan, Susan Lund, Setsko Sato, Becky Vlamis, and Megan Williams. Chad Campbell is our director. Brendan Banaszak is our production assistant. Our intern is Martina Castro. Kevin Waite is our technical director, and he gets help from Marty Curcius and Sue Klein. Marcus Rosenbaum edits the program. The senior producer is Sue Goodwin. And for one last time, our executive producer is Leith Bishop. We will miss her leadership, her vision, and her north of the border sense of humor. We wish her well in her new endeavor at NPR West. I'm Lynn Neary. This is Talk of the Nation, NPR News.